It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last week, there was some movement on police reform legislation in the State House. The Judiciary Committee approved an amendment that would create a database of previous disciplinary actions for use in hiring of officers. Last June, State Representatives Summer Lee and Ed Gainey introduced a bill to change use of force laws 1 year after unarmed African-American teenager Antoine Rose was fatally shot by a white police officer in East Pittsburgh. Representative Gainey, why do you think that that bill has sat in committee for the last 12 months?
Well, I think one is that, you know, again, it's up to the Republican leadership to pull up the bill. And again, we had 19 bills that hadn't been pulled up in years. House bill, the use of force, 1664 bill, we know it has to come up. We know that we have to have a conversation about it. The one thing that's been universal, regardless of what day we talk, decade we talk about, is the use of force when it comes to police and the African-American community. So we know just recently, when you look at what happened in Atlanta, when you look what happened in Minneapolis, we know the bill has to come up. And we know that sooner or later, it will come up. But right now, the Republican leadership, we have to still convince them to bring this bill up. But it's a bill that's long overdue.
Was there momentum last June? You know, this was 3 months after Michael Rosfeld, the officer who shot and killed Antoine Rose, was acquitted. Was there momentum at that time for your legislation? And if so, what happened to it?
There was momentum in the streets. There was momentum amongst the crowd that understood that this type of legislation needed to be discussed. But I think that at the end of the day, the Republican leadership didn't feel that they wanted to discuss the use of force bill. And so, like the rest of the 19 bills that we had introduced, it didn't go anywhere. It has to be discussed. If it's not discussed, then we're not going to change anything. The status quo will continue to give us the same results that's been happening. And as long as there's a demand, we have an opportunity to bring it up. At some moment in time, it must come up for discussion.
Under current Pennsylvania law, officers are justified in using deadly force when, in the moment, they feel it's the only recourse to prevent serious injury to themselves or others, or if they believe it necessary to prevent a suspect's escape from arrest for a suspected felony. How would your legislation change justification for using deadly force?
I mean, if you look at the case of an Antoine Rose, and you're right, that's the definition that they use with Antoine Rose, but let's be honest, he didn't have a gun. He was fleeing. He was no way a threat to the officer at all. The use of force that we're talking about really focuses on de-escalation. There's a way to de-escalate a situation. In Minneapolis, they had him handcuffed. They had him down. There was no need to put his knee in his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. He was already detained. The rest of the officers that created a wall around him dying should have been de-escalating the situation with their own police, but they failed to police the police. So our legislation discusses about how we change that to de-escalating, not just leave it so broad that it's up to an officer to decide whether he was in fear of his life. Because I can guarantee you that guy on the ground with a knee in his neck was not in fear. That officer didn't fear for his life. If anything, the gentleman, Mr. Floyd, feared for his life as he called out to his mama before he died.
Does your bill include other use of force, such as restraint? And what changes are you suggesting about restraining an individual so it's not harmful to that individual, nor is it harmful to the law officer?
There's other pieces of legislation out there that focuses directly on what you're speaking about. But this right here focuses on exactly how we de-escalate a situation to ensure that both people go home. Like I've said before, and I will continue to say, I know some great police officers. Listen, I would leave my children with them and know that they would be safe, and I know that they would be okay. But there's those that are out there. You can't tell me that cop didn't have some malicious in his heart to kill that African-American when he already had the situation in hand.
How does your legislation fit together with the other bills that you have mentioned to resolve this situation? How do they fit together?
The way our bills is, they're complementary. Like you talked about different tactics. Well, the chokehold, you've heard them talk about it in D.C. I just told you that We got a couple reps at the state that's been induced, so that's complementary to the use of force. The database that we passed out of the judicial committee, that's complementary to the use of force, because we should be tracking officers. You know, so these things, it's not one bill will fit all. And again, we'll have to amend and adjust as we go forward in society. We are never here to say that the use of force bill will solve all problems, but we have to start somewhere. The use of force bill is a great place to start.
Representative, the laws did not change after the shooting death of Antoine Rose. What gives you hope that they might change now?
I thought the vote that we could create a database based on police misconduct, that's progress. After Antoine Rose was shot in the back 3 times when he was murdered, we didn't have that. Is it enough? Absolutely not. But is it a first step? Yeah. Like I said, the situation's not going nowhere. Matter of fact, these protests in the street, they continue to bring it up every single day of the injustice of police violence. Every single day, it seems like there's a new, you know, a new picture on social media or a new news story of a cop killing an African-American. This is not going nowhere. It didn't go nowhere in the 40s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010, and we in 2020. So when people say, well, yeah, it may have took 2 years, but look what we just got accomplished on Monday. That's what I'm saying. I can't tell you the time or place, but we know for a fact that the use of force bill will be called up. It will get its just due. And in some form or fashion, we will get it passed. We got to stop this. Nobody is saying the whole police force is bad, but there is no reason why there is such a great multitude of African Americans dying at the hands of law enforcement. That has to change.
State Representative Ed Gainey of Pittsburgh is a lead sponsor of legislation to change use of force laws in Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. High fever, fatigue, muscle, joint pain. If you're experiencing these symptoms, you might be thinking you should get tested for COVID-19. With warmer weather and the stay-at-home orders lifted, people are getting outside. But doctors are warning that those same symptoms are often caused by another condition, Lyme disease. Dr. Andrew Nowak is Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, and he's an expert on Lyme disease. So, Doctor, everyone seems hyper-aware of COVID-19 symptoms. Have you or any of your colleagues seen any confusion by patients thinking they might have one disease but actually have the other?
Absolutely, Kevin. We here at Children's Hospital get children from all over Western Pennsylvania. And these days, when I'm getting children who are referred in for Lyme disease, it's actually not uncommon that someone tested them for COVID before they made the diagnosis of Lyme disease, because COVID is so very much in people's minds that they often choose to look for that before they're doing the diagnostic test for Lyme disease.
So if a person, child or adult, has symptoms, should they get a COVID test first, do you think, or not?
So that can be a difficult question to answer depending on where we're at in any epidemic. What we can say now from the data from almost every county in the western half of the state is that we are in a significant decline in our COVID cases. However, we are entering our prime Lyme disease season, and I can tell you from personal experience, lots of folks are coming into our clinic. I think anyone who has one of the characteristic rashes of Lyme or has one of the manifestations like knee swelling or arthritis, certainly you should think about Lyme disease and not need to test for COVID in those patients.
So there are some similar symptoms, but you just mentioned a couple that are specific for Lyme disease, the arthritis feeling, knee swelling, rash. Any others we should be on the lookout for?
I think, as you said, you know, the tiredness, the fatigue, and the fevers can be common to both conditions. One of the big differences with COVID, though, is that it attacks the lungs and the respiratory tree, which Lyme disease has nothing to do with. But if there's no respiratory symptoms whatsoever, and if you're really dealing with a lot of joint aches and any of the rashes or swelling of the joints, that's really Lyme disease, and I think you don't need any testing for COVID.
According to the CDC, Pennsylvania has led the nation in cases of Lyme disease since 2011. So just how bad is it in our region?
Just to give you a reference point, Kevin, about 20 years ago when I started doing infectious disease work at UPMC Children's, we would have in a year a couple of cases, five cases in a year. It was a very low incidence infection. In this past year at the hospital, just finishing our data, we saw probably about 1,500 patients with Lyme disease. So we've really had an actual epidemic of Lyme disease in the western half of the state.
All right. So this disease is carried by black-legged ticks. What about our area is made for a good home, a breeding ground for these ticks?
Boy, that's a fantastic question. We just don't know for sure. We know that there has definitely been an explosion of the numbers of ticks in our area. And that's good data that's provided to us by partners all over the state, especially at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, who've collaborated with us on some research studies. And we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of ticks that carry Lyme disease, which helps to explain why we've seen such a huge increase in cases. But what's really contributed to the explosion of ticks, we don't know. And there are some theories about global warming and deforestation, but no one knows for sure. We do know that the black-legged tick, which we also call the deer tick or the Ixodes tick, has been a very, very common component of what we've seen in our area as a reason for Lyme disease.
Kids are active. They're running around outside. They're rolling around all over the place. You're a pediatrician. So is Lyme disease more severe for adults than for kids?
It definitely is. It mimics COVID a little bit that way, in that children tend to have more mild manifestations. They tend not to get as ill with it, and they tend to respond really well to treatment and not have symptoms that persist after the antibiotics. That's a particularly big problem in adult patients who often have complaints that persist for months or even in some patients, unfortunately, years after they're appropriately treated. So it's definitely a less severe infection in children. However, it happens much more often in children because, as you said, they're out and about in the wilderness where we want them to be. We want them outside and not on screens, and therefore they're going to get exposed to Lyme fairly frequently.
But I assume you don't have to be out in the wilderness. These ticks can hop on you just, you know, walking by some shrubs or brushing up against some shrubs or something like that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. These ticks need very little in order to get to a patient. And so they can be in your backyard. They can be in a shrub that you're passing. They're really distributed all over Western Pennsylvania because a lot of the animals that they hang on to, deer and mice and other mammals, they roam all around our yards, as we all well know. So you can acquire Lyme disease all over Western PA. And in fact, some pets can bring ticks into your house and unknowingly bite you. So you have to pay attention when you're outside to look for them on your skin. And you also have to pay close attention to your pets and make sure they're appropriately treated.
Dr. Andrew Nowak is Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. And he's an expert on Lyme disease. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate the time today.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For nearly 6 years, Jada House International, a faith-based social ministry organization located in Hazelwood, has provided space for people to discuss social challenges. Terry Shields is the founder and executive director of Jada House. Terry, how have these discussions, these conversations changed during a pandemic, and even more recently, as the inequities, the social and racial injustices on the minds of Pittsburghers and beyond?
It has changed Jada House drastically as far as the community, as far as the teens and the adults that I service in the community. It gave us a chance to think and revamp some things, revamp how we go about thinking, processing, how we go about creating unity in our community. Not only am I a founder and executive director of Jada House, I am the chair of the Greater Hazelwood Community Collaborative. And we had to round up and come together and service the community in a roundabout way where we're servicing them food, computers, school supplies, hand wipes and masks and all those things that are necessary during this pandemic. I think for us community coming together, it unified us more.
Terry, let me ask you this. you've been around and you've been engaging and encouraging conversations about challenges, but have the subject matter of those conversations changed over the last few months and even the last few weeks, whether it's about health concerns related to the pandemic or social injustice concerns?
Exactly. They have changed. I think we look at ourselves differently. I'm speaking in reference to the social injustice right now. We as African Americans look at ourselves differently. We took a stance now, you know, and it took something that drastic to help us take that stance. And it creates conversations with the teenagers to know who they are, know their rights, get educated on voting, know that voting changes things and makes a difference in not just the community, but in the nation that we live in. The pandemic, to me, created distance. I like hugs and I like people. So it created a distance, but it created unity where we're more in tune with our families, more in tune with our neighbors. You meet people in the grocery stores that you never thought you would even talk to because of this pandemic. So it created some type of unity, but it all, and also with the things that happened in the social injustice realm, that created a unity. So two things created, I think, sort of like a positive, even though they were both negative, they created a positive because people are coming together. They're talking more. People are realizing their stance in their culture, like, you know, privileged white Americans, non-privileged African Americans are coming together to understand each other.
You have said that you wanted to improve the well-being of the community. So give us an idea what the level of wellness is right now.
The community is not hurting as far as I'm concerned, because this is a vital community that everybody wants a part of. We are not hurting. We have come together, I feel, and I see it when you have people delivering food and you have people delivering, getting homework for the kids and computers for the kids and laptops and all the resources we have as far as housing and fixing up houses and grants and those types of things to help you, you know, continue to survive and continue to live. So no, Hazelwood is not hurting at all. Hazelwood, I feel like, is coming back and is thriving.
Terry Shields is the founder and executive director of Jada House. Thanks for taking the time, Terry.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joya Zenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.